Good afternoon, everybody. Very welcome to this hearing. Thank you very much for joining us. I would like to just quickly make a few comments, housekeeping rules. So the first thing I would like to mention is I would like to tell you that we are joined today by Patrick Amice. He is one of the Directors General at the ECB's Banking Supervision, and he will be very happy to answer your questions. Now, if you want to ask a question, please press the star followed by one on your touchtone phone. If you want to remove yourself from the question queue, then please press star followed by two. And I would also like to mention that today's hearing will be recorded, and the recording can be listened to and found later on our website as an audio file. So it can be, you can re-listen to today's hearing. And then I would like to let you know that if you're using speaker equipment, please lift the handset before making your selection. And anyone who has a question may press the star followed by one at this time. And we will first wait for a moment to gather the first question. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. As stated, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. The first question comes to the line of Manuel Guzman with Management Solutions. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I'm Manuel Guzman, partner responsible for the R&D at Management Solutions. First of all, I would like to thank you, the ECB, for the opportunity of being here today at this hearing. I would like to express three short questions related to three different topics. First one is that, as it is stated in the guide is not intended to be binding for the institutions, but rather to basis for supervisory dialogue. Indeed, given the wide scope of the guidelines, this dialogue is key. How is it planned to maintain this supervisory dialogue? The second is that during many years, there has been a trend from the regulators and supervisors to harmonize practices and methodologies in the measurement and management of different risks, aiming at to the field. With regards to climate-related risks, does the ECB plan to develop specific guidelines for each subject matter, that is, strategy, governance, risk, or additional methodological guidelines? And the third question is that the integration of climate and environmental risks into the entity's risk management frameworks is still at an, is hampered by key challenges which need to be accounted for. To mention the most important ones, the methodologies and tools to quantify the risks are still under development, so we acknowledge in the guide. The own data availability, up until recently, there was no need to collect this data. There is no or limited data available. There is an absence of common definitions. There is no common taxonomies nor risk definitions. And there is a consideration of the critical impact of COVID-19. Therefore, we think that a phasing approach is required. Is there a phasing plan for the implementation of these guidelines? Thank you very much.
Many thanks, Manuel. This is good afternoon, everyone. This is Patrick Amice, I'll have pleasure of answering the different questions together with two of my colleagues, Juan Chalekens and Carlo Di Maio. I may give them the floor for a few questions as well. Before I start answering your questions, Manuel, just to remind everyone that this call is taking place in the context of the public consultation we opened on the 20th of May, and it which is lasting on until the 25th of September, and we are hopeful that we get as many feedback letters and comments as possible, and that we can incorporate all of this in the finalization of the guide that should take place before the end of this year. And so please, if you want to submit comments, make sure that you do so before the 25th of September using the links that are provided in our webpage. Again, also before continuing to answer on your question, Manuel, just want to remind everyone that this guide is really geared at improving risk management, governance practices, as well as making sure that climate and related and environmental risks are duly incorporated into the business strategy determination of the banks, into the risk capital determination of the banks, and also into their disclosures. And I think we are very happy to confirm that for drafting of this guide, we did benefit from a lot of input from our colleagues in the national competent authorities within the single supervision mechanism. And we anticipate that these guides or the stress of this guide will be also applied on less significant institutions, of course, on a proportionate basis by the different national competent authorities. So turning to your question, Manuel, I think the first one I got, I'm not sure I got really the second one, so maybe you could repeat it on the first one. You mentioned correctly that the guide is not intended as being a binding document for the banks. We are not regulators, so we're not going to bind the banks, but we believe that within the context of the current regulatory framework, and I insist on this, we believe that any of all of the expectations are stated in this guide are grounded into current regulatory in the current regulatory framework, and this is explicitly mentioned in the guide. We believe that it is important for the entire banking industry to start incorporating climate-related and environmental risks into their internal processes and procedures, and into their risk management and loan decision and loan granting process in particular. So how we are going to follow up on this, we will start engaging as early as 2021 with the banks to first understand how the bank self-assess their distance to the expectations that are in this guide. So basically, we will ask banks to provide us with a self-assessment of the expectations and how far away they are from these expectations, and we will want to understand how the banks plan to remediate and to get closer to the expectations laid down in the guide. This will be done through supervisory dialogue and with full consideration of the time needed for adapting processes, tools, and so on and so forth. So while the guide will be applicable as soon as the final version is published in our website, we do foresee some adaptation time for the banks. And that adaptation time, of course, will depend very, very much on the specifics of each financial institution, of each bank, and will incorporate the specifics of their business model and the specifics of their loan portfolios in particular. So we will engage on the bank-by-bank dialogue on this, and we will want to be reassured by the banks that they do take steps to get closer to these expectations in a reasonable period of time. And I don't want to quantify what is reasonable at this stage. That will really depend upon a dialogue between the bank and its joint supervisory team. So we'll start all of this in 2021. We will also look at banks' disclosures over time and see whether, in terms of disclosures, this is also getting closer to our expectations. For your second question, which I understand, but just if you could confirm that you are asking whether we plan to develop specific guidelines on how to harmonize the management of risks. Is it the thrust of your question, Manuel?
Yeah, exactly. The idea there will be, we can expect additional methodological guidelines or additional specific guidelines for each of the subject matters that are, appears in the guidelines. No, for example, for the strategy, for governance, for risk management, and for disclosure. No? The idea is that if there will be an additional effort from the ECB to try to ensure a level playing field according to these aspects.
Okay, so here I don't think so. We are not planning yet to issue additional guidelines. I think it's important that we see things developing in the banks. We acknowledge as well, of course, as you pointed out, that we still have, and I think this is the first of your third question, we still have work ongoing also at international level with respect to the proper methodologies to be developed and starting with the assessment of risks and the quantification methodology. So we do acknowledge this. I think the main message we want to give here is that this should not be a reason for non-action. So it is important that banks start working on this on their own. Of course, we do anticipate that we will see further work and progress on methodologies, on the ways to handle the different risks, on the implementation of the taxonomies, identification of assets, etc. So all of this is due to progress, but it cannot progress without the banks setting themselves to it already now. And the only thing that we are for sure seeing in the horizon that is already present now are the risks. So we need to start tackling the risks, even if we fully acknowledge that all methodologies are not totally in place yet, but that will come as we progress. And so we all need to start progressing, and this is the reason why I also mentioned that we intend to see the application of this guide over time, and we will fully incorporate in our thinking and in our follow-up work as intended the need for some phasing or transition of the banks to the expectations of the guide, and fundamentally to a sound incorporation of climate-related and environmental risks into the governance, risk management, business strategies, and disclosures of the banks. So that will the effective implementation of the guide will take time. We will want to make sure that banks start preparing adequately for this as soon as possible, because the risks are not waiting and have started materializing already now. Shall we move to another question?
The next question comes from the line of Fanny Bu with Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for welcoming us in this public hearing. I'm representing Société Générale with my colleague also, Erwan de Villiers, which is also connected. Let me have a chance to react on what you have said so far regarding the fact that the guidelines are grounded on regulatory requirements. So far, we think that the ECB should ensure for sure that such guides and existing requirements stemming from, for example, from the EBA or other regulatory texts are consistent. So far, we know that the EBA has a mandate in CRR2 to include ESG factor in SREP, and this mandate has not been achieved so far. And regarding, for example, prudential treatment of sustainable finance assets, the deadline is by 2025. Also, you are mentioning in your guide clear reference to DBA guidelines on loan origination. These guidelines are applicable by June 2021 with transitional arrangement of several years, especially regarding monitoring of loans. So we think that regarding such timelines, what could be the most reasonable solution to progress both on supervisors and bank side is to postpone the supervisory dialogue by 1 year. And I would add also in such context that we are currently in the outing of the COVID period, and I guess the return to normal should be progressive in such context, as the ECB, for example, has provided relief measures for banks in such conditions. Also, let's be also aware that such guide will be applicable based on the progressive level of banks. And I guess what you have introduced so far in terms of there could be some different stage of maturity and a more staggered approach to be introduced in the implementation. We fully agree on such approach. And I guess we can reflect also on what could be the drivers on that, for example, introducing a phasing by the nature of environmental risk by order of importance. For example, we can be more quick on climate risk, but on biodiversity that will take more time. Also, another driver could be the risk typology. We can be more ready on credit risk and operational risk, for example. And the last driver would be the scope of clients. Let's say that we can be quite ready on large corporates, but on more retail portfolio, for example, it would take more time. Another point also, it relates to the data availability prerequisite that should be applied on such implementation of the guide. We know that the methodology that we want to introduce to be compliant with the guide will need the data, will need that such data to be standardized, reliable, and so we think that to develop assessment methodology, for example, it would only be possible when we have such standardized data as it is reflected in the FRD, which is in discussion. So one major point that we wanted to raise with you is to really consider such postponement of the supervisory dialogue so that we can reach a timing which is relevant for all of us. Another high-level point also in relation to this guide is the level of application of the guide. What is not so clear in the way it is written is the level of application, and we think that it should remain at consolidated level. If there should be some perimeter to be explored, this could be considered in deep dives and so on, but we guess that we should have a more holistic view on the level of application and remain it at the consolidated level. Also, what was also already discussed and introduced, I think, in your presentation, is how we introduce better proportionality in such guide. And we think that we cannot treat all asset classes in the same basket, that we must reflect on how we can be more proportionate, and also, although that the guide is introducing materiality concept, and it is quite positive that you have think of that in such guide, we think that also in addition to considering how we treat different asset classes, we can also reflect on the maturity of jurisdiction in relation to environmental risk. For example, we can say that in some jurisdiction, the decarbonization horizon could be different. And an additional point also is, could you also clarify that in your guide, in relation to your explanatory boxes that it is examples, that they are not deemed to be used as the general supervisory rules by inspection teams. And such clarification will be helpful as to have a common understanding between inspectors. And one other point, and I have also a lot of other points, but I want really to focus on what could be really the major point for us. One last point that I would like to raise is also to clarify in this guide what we are focusing on in terms of impact. Are we talking about the financial maturity of bank with relations to environmental risk, for example? And we think that this is the sense that is taken in this guide, so that the impact of environmental risk of our banks to the environment, is not included in this guide and should be included in the application. So as to make clear that we are really focusing on the financial materiality. And in such configuration, we should also reflect on the part of the guide which is talking about GHG emission and be more consistent on current discussion on disclosure on such aspects.
Okay, many thanks. That's long question, but I understand there are already some comments that will be made in writing as part of your answer to the consultation. So maybe I will go quickly through the different points. I hope I can already provide some elements for the reflection on your side as well. So on your question on the consistency with the prudential treatment. So as I mentioned, we have taken great care in making sure that we ground those expectations into the current regulatory treatment, and which means in particular that, of course, we are aware that there are currently discussions on the prudential treatment of green versus brown assets, etc. So these ones are ongoing. We are, as you correctly pointed out, the EBA has a mandate on this. If I understand well, my EBA colleagues, it is possible that they try to deliver earlier than anticipated in the mandate, but we will see this, of course, coming from the EBA. I want to clarify that, of course, the ECB is fully involved together with other national competent authorities in the work of the EBA. So we are working very, very much together with our EBA colleagues, and we are also liaising as appropriate with our colleagues in the European Commission. So I think this is very consistent in the way we touch upon those different topics. So of course we will continue seeing the prudential developments, and this is, I think, one of the reasons where we mentioned that we do not anticipate that out of the supervisory dialogue, we have Pillar 2 requirement consequences across the board for the time being. So I think that we'll have to wait a little bit. I would not rule out that some GSTs may want to take some Pillar 2 requirements at some point, especially if they are in face in the front of institutions that would totally underestimate the climate-related risks and climate-related and environmental risks and would show no sign of preparation for those risks. And I want to recall as well that we are, of course, aiming at tackling both the so-called transition and physical risks in all their dimensions, and so we may have here and there, this is decisions to go into to requirements, but we will not do this across the board. And of course, we will continue participating and following on the current developments on the regulatory side with respect to the prudential treatment. So we do not intend to anticipate on this. You mentioned the June 21 application for this EBA document on loan origination, and I think this is why we believe we are on spot, because once if you want to start, and also factoring in, of course, the phasing in that is in this document, if you want to start being ready for June next year, I suppose that there is already work ongoing in the banks. Otherwise, of course, you are sure to be late in the implementation. And so we believe that this is pretty timely, and that we can start incorporating those considerations also for June 21.
If I may react on loan origination, on the guidance that you are mentioning, June 2021 is a first deadline, and we have a long phase-in of several years from some parts of the guide. So I guess also considering the EBA guidelines on loan origination, the June 2021 is just the start of the implementation of the guidelines. So we also have to bear in mind this, that it would take several years to implement. And so asking for such phase-in in terms of approach, it could be consistent also with the EBA guidelines on loan origination.
Yeah, this is very well noted, and I think this is part of the topics that we will want to hear from. What we want to hear from banks is consistent plans and the real direction of travel. So I think it would not be extremely productive if we are getting from banks, I'm not moving until I have the full lineup of guidelines and methodologies and everything, and I'm not going to invest in any way or form for risks that are already materializing in banks' balance sheets. I'm not sure that would be totally consistent with sound and prudent risk management overall. So we hope we can avoid that phase of the discussion and go immediately into discussions regarding adaptation plans, trying to understand in the different banks how they are exposed to these risks and how they want to go about them, and if this is of course in the course of and embedded into the adaptation to other regulatory expectations like the Rome origination guideline, this is very fine to us, of course, and so this is very well noted. The point is to start seeing adequate movement, and they are in the expectations of the guide. We believe there are things that will indeed demand some time for full implementation, and we fully acknowledge this. There are other elements where we could hope for swifter implementation already, and that will be, of course, the thrust of the dialogue between banks and their joint supervisory teams. You mentioned a few interesting ideas for staggered approach, and I think they are all well made, and this is something that could be discussed on the bank by bank level. I would hesitate to put this black and white on the guide because we believe that this dialogue will really need to take into account the specific business models of banks. And so for some banks, one of these classification or staggering approaches that you mentioned could be more relevant than for others. And we would like to leave a little bit to each bank some leeway to reflect upon what is best for them, given their current business model, portfolios, etc., and how they want to organize that. So that's clearly something we would like to leave to sound one-to-one dialogue between each bank and its joint supervisory team. As regards the level of application of the guide, we indeed our starting point is application on a consolidated level. Of course, that will also follow the different lines of application of supervisory of supervision, basically in the different banking groups. Of course, with the aim of remaining consistent at the consolidated level as much as possible. But of course, we need to have in mind as well that many banking institutions have cross-border activities, including outside of the SSM. And this means that those banking groups will have to cope as well with requirements potentially stemming from other banking supervisors, and we are of course committed to liaising internationally with the banking supervision community to make sure that we remain consistent as much as possible. You had a reference to the boxes. I think it is very clear in the guide that there are examples to make our points better understood, and I think that will remain as is. And as finally, as to your final question on what is the which line we are taking with this guide with respect to whether we are looking at the impact of climate environmental risks on the banks, or whether we are tackling the issue of the impact of the banks themselves too on climate and the environment. I think you're right to point out to the fact that we are talking mostly of the impact of climate-related and environmental risks on the banks. And there is indeed this a little bit of a difficulty a slight addition potentially on the disclosure front, because you know that on this disclosure front as well, we are also banks will have and already have some specific expectations or requirements to disclose the assessment of their own impact on climate-related and environmental risk. And we believe that if this is not done well, this is in turn a risk for the banks in terms of reputational or compliance risks. And it is important that banks keep this in mind also from the risk factors. So this is retracting, basically. Shall we move to another question?
The next question comes from Volker Hegemann with European Association of Cooperative Banks. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak up. In fact, I have three questions that came from our members. The first one would actually be on the... we noticed that the guide focused very much on a seems to focus on a short-term horizon very much. There are references to 3 years in several places. However, climate risk is particularly may manifest over a long, much longer time period. So the French climate stress test, for example, considers projections of decades. Could you possibly explain why that is particularly so, and why you have this rather short-term aspect? The second question I have is about how could, in fact, proportionate application of the guide to LSIs look like? Please allow me to mention that context that particularly LSIs service much more retail customers. So private customer and SMEs, and it will particularly be difficult to get data from that customer segment. as we cannot expect also from the new NFRD that it will be extended to the large, to the private customers, of course, but particularly not also to SMEs, because the Commission seems to be quite reluctant on that one. And third point, that is the basic, possibly long-term question. You mentioned it already during the webinar, but could you confirm that for the time being and for the near future, you do not envisage any capital measures, any capital add-ons based on climate risk? Thank you. That's it.
Okay, many thanks. Can I ask you maybe just to repeat your first question? I'm not sure I have heard it well, so just to make sure.
Okay, I do again. Yes, in fact, the guide focuses in several places on a relatively short-term horizon. It makes references in several places to a period of 3 years, while climate risk particularly has a much longer time horizon. So the French climate stress test, for example, considered periods of decades. So why here this sometimes short-term horizon? And also, if I may add then also, what is why is the link with liquidity here made so strong? That's the other one, which is also short-term.
Okay, thanks. So on this first question, so why we take a relatively short-term horizon? Because especially for this kind of long-term evolving risks, we believe that climate risk and the nature of climate risk is such that the longer you take and we take collectively to take action, the more severe the consequences will be. And this is also true from the perspective of the impact on banks' balance sheets and banks' business models and from the perspective of the evolution of the geographies in which European banks operate. So we believe that it is important that we all start taking action now for understanding the risk and tackling them adequately, again, from a risk management perspective. And so if we wait for too long, the consequences will be far harsher and far more difficult to mitigate going forward. So again, it is important that we all start as soon as possible. With respect to your second question on proportionality, so I think that your point is very well made, and I think this is obviously one of the topics that we will need to look into, and I'm sure that our colleagues in national competent authorities have this squarely in mind as well. And the way in terms of data collection from customers, in terms of adaptation of governance structures, etc., of course, we will need to apply proportionality in the application of the expectations of this guide. And so I have no doubt that proportionality will be applied. And just if you allow me for an example, we know that in the mortgage lending business, banks are financing the acquisition of properties with different energy classes. And we know that this energy efficiency will become one of the decisive and is one of the decisive factors for adaptation of to a low carbon emission environment. And so we will need to think how it is possible to achieve this without putting undue pressure on the customers and the banks, etc. And so this is something that will need to be considered going forward. And again, I don't doubt that proportionality will be applied, especially for the less significant institutions. On your third question, yes, I can confirm that we do not envision to go to take the route of capital add-ons across the board for the time being. I insist on the across the board because, as I mentioned, we may already be faced with banks that are exposed to significant risk and are not handling them properly, in which case, of course, there might be capital considerations at the end of the process, but across the board, we will not engage into this. So we will continue participating in the discussions and the regulatory discussions that are currently taking place and will continue for some time.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question comes to the line of Fernando de la Mora with Alvarez & Marsal. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Patrick and team. Thanks for taking the time. And congratulations for a well-structured and comprehensive guide on an emerging topic that is sometimes hard to understand. My question relates to one of the expectations included in the guide, which relates to the ICAP. One of your expectations states that ICAP should capture climate and environmental risk. In addition, you also mentioned that climate risk stress tests should go beyond 3 years, so tying up with the comment earlier on the time horizon. Can you help us understand what you mean by changing the time horizon of the ICAPs? Banks typically plan their businesses on a 3 to 5 year time frame, extending that time frame to 30, 40, 50 years. Embedded in some of the time horizons used for climate stress tests could be quite challenging. Are you expecting banks to include climate risk in ICAPs using just a three-year time horizon? Or when they do the stress test, could they do something idiosyncratic but not force them to do the full planning through such a time, such a large or long time horizon as the one expected in the guidelines. So your direction would be appreciated. Thank you.
Yeah, many thanks, Fernando, for this question. I think it's a very good question. I think we do acknowledge that, and I would like to reassure everyone that we do not intend to change the ICAP determination time horizon across the board, of course, on this. I think the mention here and the reference here is really to the fact that in the overall reflection with respect to ICAP and the relevant consequences on the bank's business models, it is very important for this kind of risk to take also a longer-term perspective. And to give an example, so it's more from a qualitative perspective, I would say. And I think over time we may see methodologies developing that will allow for a bit longer-term stress testing. You know that in some other jurisdictions there were already some attempts at that and good attempts at that. In the Bank of England, for instance. This clearly has to further progress in terms of methodology. And so we do not expect, of course, banks to adopt the 20 years time horizon on their ICAP determination across the board. And again, it will be mostly from a qualitative perspective. And to give an example, in one particular bank, might be very exposed already today to a line of business or to a particular sector that might be doing fine for the next 5 years, but will probably get into trouble going forward as part of the transition of our economies to a low carbon intensity structure. So in this case, even if from a purely quantitative perspective, in the next 5 years, you would perhaps not anticipate too many difficulties. It is very likely that in future, those difficulties will start in the longer run, they will start materializing. And so it would be good that banks, as part of their ICAAP process, start understanding and reflecting upon this to make sure that they have enough time to rebalance or mitigate those upcoming risks and do not wait until it is too late to react to these upcoming risks. I hope I am clear enough in this answer.
Yes, thank you.
The next question comes in line of Constance Usherwood with AFME. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much. I just wanted to draw on a couple of points that have already been raised, but just highlight them. So with the coordination with other initiatives, it's very welcome that you're looking at all the other areas, such as the loan origination and monitoring. I'd also throw into the mix that internal governance is now being updated by the EBA, and that will also require some cross-coordination on the governance side. I think what would be really helpful for banks that I've been talking to is actually setting out a series of kind of milestones or goalposts over the next 5 to 10 years in terms of how you hope to develop this guide. For instance, you have the kind of dialogue maybe next year in August, but then kind of when are the next expectations? Will you update it when the ESG incorporation into SREP comes out from the EBA? That'd be really useful to know that. And I think it would also be quite helpful. I appreciate that you want to do it on a bank-specific basis, but I think it's fairly uniform across the industry in terms of how they are dealing with certain risks being phased in. You know, climate risk really is at the front and environmental risk comes later down the line. So I think some uniformity of phasing in could be quite helpful, even where you need to take account of the bank-specific aspects. Again, it's welcome that you confirm the aspect of the consolidated level. There are aspects, however, which maybe aren't necessarily in line with this. So, for instance, the expectations on KPIs would seem to go against that consolidated level in terms of the level of granularity in the business plans. So, you know, one suggestion we had, and it would be interesting just to hear your views on this, is maybe to take that out, given that it is something that's set by the TCFD, which all banks are following. So it may be better not to necessarily set that out within the context of the guide. And then finally, one area just to pick up on is we've struggled with is this flexibility between climate risk being an aspect of existing risk drivers. And then some banks have already gone ahead and created also a kind of separate risk work stream for climate risk specifically. I know you've been quite careful within the guide on that, but it would be just really useful to have that clarity that there is flexibility for banks to either kind of keep it streamlined within existing risk drivers and where they want to go on top of that and create a separate work risk stream for climate risk. Thank you.
Okay, many thanks. So on the consolidated level, so in a granularity of KPIs, I take the point. We need to reflect further upon it. I think my immediate answer on this would be that. We also anticipate that the materialization of risks will not be uniform across the board and across the planet. So I think depending on jurisdictions, this is of course true for physical risks, as you probably know, and when we look at scientific projections, I think the materialization of global warming, for instance, will take probably different forms depending on where you are on the planet, depending on the jurisdictions, and of course the transition risks will depend crucially on how this is handled in each jurisdiction. So my immediate answer to this would be that even if we look at these risks from a more consolidated perspective, the fact that you have pretty granular KPIs from a jurisdiction perspective might still be in order for any bank and its supervisor to really understand where the risks lie. But that's something we will, of course, consider based on the comments made. With respect to the flexibility on the risk identification, I think that you correctly noted that we are a bit prudent on this front. And again, since we all understand that there is still some work to do on methodologies, on risk assessment and risk quantification, we did not want to go immediately into normative assumptions in that respect. And so it will, I think what is important is that banks start working on this, and I think we will indeed see how all of this develops. And as you know, sometimes you may start in one direction and discover that perhaps this is not the right direction for you after all, and change course later on. So we want all of this to happen as well. What matters is that banks start reflecting upon it, and that will be a matter for further supervisory dialogue. Yeah. You had, I think, a point on phasing in, and especially, I think, advocating on the fact that we put more emphasis on climate-related risks first and move to other environmental risks later on. I think this is probably de facto how things will play out, given the level of maturity of the different developments in that regard. I think it's fair to say that we are probably a bit more advanced collectively on climate related risks than on environmental risks. But that being said, I think it might depend on the specific business model of banks, and so I'm not sure we want to crystallize yet in any way or form any sort of phasing in with respect to climate versus environments. But it is, I think it's true that it will probably happen like that for a majority of the banks for obvious reasons. Did I answer your points?
Yes, thank you very much. That's good.
Thank you.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone. The next question is from the line of Massimiliano Marini with Intesa San Paolo. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning to everyone. And again, thanks a lot for giving us this opportunity. So I have just three questions, and I can go through one by one. These guides, we know that it's not binding for the institution, but it serves as a basis for supervisory dialogue. And as a part of this supervisory dialogue, the ECB will discuss with institutions the ECB expectation set out in this guide in terms of any possible divergences in institution practices. So my question is, how does the ECB factorize the expectations into the supervisory process, for instance, this REPA assessment? And what could we expect as banks after the assessment? So, for instance, the gap analysis, findings, recommendations. Thank you.
Okay, many thanks. So what we intend to do once the guide is finalized, I think the first thing we will do will be to engage with banks on a bilateral basis to ask them to give us a kind of primary gap analysis assessment, comparing basically where they currently stand with each of the different expectations in the guide. So I think that would form the basis of the supervisory dialogue later on. So to have an understanding of the gap analysis, and also, of course, to have an understanding of how banks would plan to go about it. And we will anticipate, of course, that a number of methodological discussions will be raised. There will be a number of unknowns. There will be a number of things where banks might lack data, etc. But we know that in the area of data, banks are also can also be very active in gathering data for risk analysis, and we believe it is important that they start gathering data for risk analysis also in the areas of climate-related and environmental risks. So we will really start from this gap analysis and intended follow-up from the banks to engage in a supervisory dialogue. And that would typically finalize with a set of further recommendations from the GST to the bank with respect to the sound incorporation of climate-related and environmental risks into the different business processes of the bank, and the risk appetite setting, the business strategy, governance, risk management, disclosures. So that is the most likely outcome for all banks in the first years of application of the guide. In the meantime, of course, we are aware that regulatory discussions will continue developing, and of course, that would have, at the end of the day, once regulatory developments are finalized and we have changes in regulation, that would probably end up in a more more direct link to supervisory expectations in terms of capital requirements. But as I mentioned, we are not there yet. And so we do not intend to end up with capital requirements across the board.
Thank you. So we know that the ECB will continue to develop its supervisory approach to managing and disclosing the climate-related and environmental risks over time, taking into account the regulatory developments, as well as evolving practice in the industry and the supervisory community. We know that the regulatory initiative have gathered pace over the recent period, starting from the UK PRA and after the German BaFin. And the EBA already plans guidance on some topics. So my question is, how does the ECB take into account any upcoming regulatory developments? Do you have any supervisory timeline to share with us, with the industry, regarding any further developments on supervisory landscape on ESG risks?
So I think very simply, we will of course apply any regulatory development that comes, and we will apply them in due course. And we will adapt, of course, our expectations and practices to new regulatory developments. Of course, I cannot share with you in timeline yet, because that will crucially depend on the regulatory developments, and we are not regulators, so I would not want to anticipate on any regulatory development at EBA or EU level at this point in time. And so I think we will, of course, continue participating and getting involved, but I would really leave this to the relevant bodies.
Okay, last question. Developing appropriate tools, methodologies, and methods to deal with this risk has been identified as one of the most important challenges to overcome for financial institutions, central banks, supervisory authorities, and researchers. That's why the key characteristics of climate risk render the appropriate assessments relatively difficult, because they have different approaches comparing the traditional risks with the climate risks. So this is just to say, just to give us a sort of flexibility, because all the developments are still ongoing, are underway, especially from the academic standpoint. So if you have already developed or do you have any methodology or any plan to develop a methodology to assess ESG risk within the SREP, as in case if you can share the methodology.
Again, I think we don't have plans to develop methodologies on this topic at this point in time. We do recognize that there are methodology discussions across the board, which is, by the way, something we are all very used to. And if you think of the dynamics of development of internal models in the past for credit or market risk or even operational risks, it happened exactly in the same way. And so what I would like to take control from that, because we could see that the entire banking industry started also developing on its own on the bank-by-bank basis, and at some point we all discovered that some methodologies work better than others, and then things tend to crystallize a little bit. But I think we are a bit too early for that, and so we are happy to see action and see movement, and methodologies will develop further on. And of course, at some point, we may see expectations coming from the regulators, but I think it's a bit too early for this at this point in time.
Thanks a lot. That's it from my side. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Etienne Atom with KPMG. Please go ahead.
Thank you for this opportunity. Again, a question regarding the capital adequacy level of the banks. We know that there is a discussion ongoing at the level of the European Commission, which has asked BlackRock to provide some thought material. You mentioned that some regulatory developments may come. In the guide, we see that climate and environmental risks are considered as risk drivers and not as new risk categories in their own right, with direct impact on risk-weighted assets. To what extent will the quality of disclosure play a role for the European banking industry in avoiding new prudential risk categories related to climate and environmental risks? Thank you.
I think this is probably a question for regulators than more than for supervisors. So I could voice a personal opinion, but I'm not sure this is of any relevance in a regulatory debate. Maybe what I can say on the quality of disclosures. We are convinced that as the overall sensitivity to climate-related and environmental risks increase in the market, and this is, we believe, bound to happen, banks will start getting discriminated more and more on the quality of the disclosures, because some external investors or external parties will start more clarity on the level of exposure of banks to potential reputational or liability risks. And I think that alone should be a very strong incentive for the banking industry to increase or enhance disclosures with respect to climate risks. So this is the only thing I could still say from a risk driver perspective. And for the rest, I would really rely upon the work of the regulators at this point in time.
Thank you.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone. The next question comes from the line of Ervin de Villiers with Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. First of all, thanks for the opportunity of speaking with you today. I would have three additional questions. First of all, while speaking about scenario analysis, could you please confirm that those exercises will only be required for a limited number of scenarios to measure material risk? My point is to say that going on environmental risk, number of scenarios needed to cover climate-related physical and transition risk, loss of biodiversity, soil pollution, water stress, will introduce huge difficulty in operational feasibility. And I want to highlight the fact that scenarios for non-climate-related risk might not even existing as of today. My second question is, while speaking about integration of climate-related risk into client credit risk assessment, do you consider that qualitative assessment, identifying climate sensitivity, client sensitivity to climate risk, is good enough regarding the time horizon at stake? To be concrete, my point is to say that we should not impact the one-year probability of default, as materialization of such risk will take much more time. And my third question would be, outside of the content of this guide, I would like to understand the interaction and the link between this consultation launched by the ECB and the current work being made by BlackRock, which has been mandated by the European Commission as advisor on ENS risk implementation into banks' risk management process. Because as looking at BlackRock areas of focus, it covers pretty much the same teams and areas as the ECB guide. Thank you.
Yeah, many thanks. So on the scenario analysis, I think the first thing we want to point out here is the development of their own scenarios by banks. So this is the starting point here in the guide. This is what we want to see happening as well. And of course, I suppose that for that respect, banks will, of course, focus on the most material risks as they identify them. And there will be, of course, discussions on a bank-by-bank basis with the relevant joint supervisory teams. But we want to see, of course, movement from the banks here. And so the right scenarios will depend on the banks, first and foremost, from a risk analysis perspective. Then you are aware that there is a number of ongoing initiatives on the supervisory side to develop scenario analysis as well. And, of course, so we will have to wait for these developments. But I would imagine, indeed, that we start with a limited number of scenarios because we are all on the learning curve here. So I would not imagine that we get immediately into very diversified and very numerous scenarios at the same time.
Because I think we are all faced with operational feasibility issues, and we all need to progress on that, and we will do this together. On your second question, client credit risk assessment, any impact on 1 year PDs, etc., I would, of course, agree that climate risks are materializing in the long run, but this is starting not to be the case anymore, quite frankly. And then I don't know if you follow a little bit the news, but you have a number of places in the planet where banks may have exposures, where you have massive fires, massive floods, droughts, flooding, etc. So we start seeing this materializing pretty much on a daily basis already, and we when you look at the trend of very significant weather events, this is increasing on a year by year basis. So I could already imagine that for some exposures, you would get an impact into 1 year PDs, depending of course on your exposures. Just to give you another example, on collateral valuations, we have jurisdictions where you have now pieces of legislation that will prohibit the leasing of properties that are below a certain energy efficiency class. And that is due to come pretty quickly and in some jurisdictions, including in Europe. And so we would anticipate that this would have, of course, a reasonable, rather material impact on collateral valuation for the banks that are exposed to those jurisdictions. So it would be important that the bank starts collecting information on this topic and start thinking whether this could have an impact on their 1 year PD. So again, I would, at this point in time, I think you're probably right that overall the immediate impact, quantitative impact on 1 year PDs might be limited, but I would not vouch for this being the case across the board. And I think this will be less and less the case as we progress in time. Did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you. Only the third one related to the BlackRock work being done today.
Yeah, so my understanding is that this work has regulatory developments in mind. So this is of course touching upon a number of points that are in our guide, and I would imagine that this work will also duly consider our guide. But at the end of the day, I think the finality is probably a bit different.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Jean-Michel Jung with McDermott, Will & Emery. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having the opportunity to speak in this public hearing. With reference to your previous statement that rapid action is required due to the dangers of climate change, I would like to ask if it is possible that the ECB, in its role as banking supervisor, can set further incentives that banks foster the objectives of the Paris Agreement. And if yes, does the ECB plan to provide these incentives? Thank you.
Sorry, could you repeat your question? I'm not sure I have understood. I had a bit of hearing. Connection was not so good. Can you repeat?
No problem. I was asking if it is possible that the ECB, in its role as banking supervisor, can set further incentives that banks foster the objectives of the Paris Agreement? And if yes, does the ECB plan to provide these incentives?
I think that the types of incentives we can provide as supervisors, again, we are not regulators, so I don't think this is for us to provide incentives in terms of capital requirements, etc. I think the types of incentive we can provide is to make sure that banks do incorporate adequately those developing risks into their governance, risk management, and disclosure practices. And if they don't do, of course, I think we will have to incentivize after some point action. And so this is the way I could imagine we incentivize action. But again, from a risk management perspective, anything else to me is more in the realm of regulation, and also, and we should not lose sight of it, of other types of legislations, and because not everything I think will depend upon banking legislations and supervision and supervisory legislation. And I think a number of other developments will probably be needed to meet and reach the targets of the Paris Agreement. In any case, this will be on the regulatory side.
Thank you very much.
We have a follow-up question from the line of Etienne Atom with KPMG. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Another question on my side regarding KYC. Does the ECB expect at some point the banks to develop a kind of a parallel KYC dedicated to environmental and climate issues with their customers? Is this something which ECB may have in mind? Thank you.
So that's a very good question. I think this is probably something that we could see happening over time as part of loan origination and risk assessment needs from banks. And I think one of the questions focused on the lack of available data at some point, and it is probable that as those risks start increasing in the bank's balance sheets, that part of this data would have to be provided by the customers to some extent. And of course, here we will have, of course, to balance a number of considerations that we are all aware of, that are not new to the information, to the request of information for information as part of loan origination and loan monitoring. So we will see that developing, but I would not. Eliminate that possibility going forward, in principle at least.
Thank you.
But I think it goes way beyond this guide. I think this is more related to the way we will collectively bridge some of the data gaps we are being faced with today.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
As a final reminder for questions, please press star followed by one on your telephone at this time. We have a question from the line of Rocio Falcones with Alvarez & Marsal. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon, and thank you very much, Patrick, for this public hearing. When reviewing the guide, we see that there are four main sections, and we have 13 expectations that can be subdivided into 44 expectations. Is there any section that is more important than others in the short term? Or is there any section that you are going to be expecting the banks to fulfill in the short term? Thank you.
All sections are important, otherwise they would not be in the guide, in the draft.
Of course.
We want to start seeing actions on each and every of them. And again, we do envision that for some of them, some kind of phasing or transition will be needed. And we will be very open to that, provided that banks start somewhere and start as soon as possible.
Thank you.
And we have a follow-up question from the line of Fanny Wu, Société Générale. Please go ahead.
One additional question will relate to the next steps in terms of this guide as to where when the guide will be published in final version. Could you provide us with more insight on that, please?
Yeah, we intend to finalize the guide by year end.
Okay, at this time, there are no further questions. I hand back to Uta Hahn-Schwieger for closing comments.
Yes, thank you very much. I would like to thank you all for your interest and for your active participation today. Thank you very much for the interesting questions. That was a great opportunity for us and for Patrick Amis in specific to address some of the unclarities or points where you still needed a bit more guidance on. I would now say that the conference is now concluded. You may disconnect your telephone. I would like to remind you all that if you still have written input, we would be very happy to receive this. Please send it to us by the 25th of September, in order for us to still be able to consider it, and please use the link that we provide on our website. Again, thank you very much for joining, and have a pleasant day. Bye-bye.